Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2011. Lecture 12, delivered on March 1, 2011. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, Review for Exam 1. Exam 1 will be on Thursday. You'll have the entire class period, 1 hour and 15 minutes, no more. It will end at 1 hour and 15 minutes at 4:50 p.m. You are allowed a 4x6 card for the exam. Yes, both sides. The exam has three parts. Part one is 20 multiple choice questions. Part two is that each worth 2 points for 40% of the exam. Part two is workout problems. They are 40 points for 40% of the exam. Part three is short answer, short essay. 5 questions, answer 4 of them, and that constitutes each one of those is worth 5 points for 20% of the exam. We get down to work here, and I'll be specific, and then I'm going to open up. You can ask me questions. If it's something that won't be on the exam, no question it won't be, I will say that's not going to be on the exam. Part one is the multiple choice. That is where you can find yourself that some of the problems are going to be very straightforward. Some of them you'll have to think a little bit about. A few of them are calculation. That might be, for example, where I would ask you to calculate the yield on a one-year treasury bill and give you possible answers. I promise you that I will figure out how you can make a mistake and those will be possible answers, unfortunately. There will also be questions in that section where memory types of memorization, questions focusing on Federal Reserve facts process. I will in that section test you on open market operations, specifically at least two questions on that. Federal Reserve, the history of Federal Reserve policy. You will be held to account for the article I assigned you, the Federal Reserve Under Fire, Part 1. So you have to know that information from there. I could ask you about disclosure statements of companies, Form 10-K, Form 8, all those kinds of questions. Ask you about risk, probe your knowledge of risk. Probe your understanding of. I don't go to complete trivia. That's not an interest of mine. But I will ask you to, I will probe you on details about risk, on details about financial intermediation, probe you on what the three aspects of financial intermediation are. Those are topics that I could ask. It's really, in a way, the widest open of the sections in the sense of I can span all of the material. Pretty much any lecture, I could pull a multiple choice question from that lecture. So in that way, it is a challenge. And you'll find that it's one that can drag you down. Stay frosty. Get the ones you know done and then walk away. You have time to come back. Don't let yourself get bogged down by a question. Just move on. Now, part two is the workout problems. There is very little partial credit at this point. We can make mistakes in little things on quizzes and in class, but when you get to the exam, this is where you have to show your muscle on them. I will ask you, I will provide you one, at least one, probably two questions will be the subject of a narrative that I will post on my website, isu-prof.com. It will arrive either late tonight or sometime tomorrow morning. I won't tell you the questions. I will simply provide you with information, and it will be incumbent upon you to figure out what I could possibly ask from that information. I do that every time for midterms and the final exam. Again, you see this information, you should know what I would want from you given that kind of information. And thereby, you should be able to crank out the answers and at least be prepared for them on the exam. On this exam, on part two, I will have you calculate financial ratios. Not a lot. It'll be a random kind of selection of ratios. I'm not going to have you calculate every full ratio I gave you. It'll just be a sampling of them. Make sure you get your units of measurement right. You'll notice that on the quiz that I just handed back, I took off, if you've got more than two units of measure incorrect, I took off a half a point for, and that's all. On the exam, you get the units of measure wrong, you lose half the credit for the question, for the answer. So you could give me the right number, but if you give me a percent instead of a time symbol, you've lost half the credit. I will ask you about measures of volatility. Business risk, contribution of operating leverage, contribution of financial leverage. I will ask those kinds of questions. I could ask you sales volatility, then business risk, then contribution of operating leverage to business risk, and contribution of financial leverage. Financial leverage. Okay, that would be a battery of four questions. Just make sure that you don't make a mistake along the way. It's catastrophic if you make a mistake high up because it falsifies the results, it invalidates the results down the line. I will ask you to do some present value, future value problems. I will ask you, for example, a simple, what's the present value of a pile of money that you are going to get in 10 years if you compound such and such interest? I will ask you for a future value lump sum. I will ask you to find the payment on a loan. I'll give you the details of the loan. You find the payment. You recall that if you are good with that calculator, this takes about a half a minute to do that problem. It's just that easy if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, you can struggle quite a bit with it. I will ask you, in terms of other problems that I could give you, I will ask you to give me the value, the price right now of a stock. I'll tell you the dividend, the growth rate, the discount rate. All you have to do is tell me the price of the stock. If you make a minor mistake, you lose all the credit. If you use D0 instead of D1, so be sure that you use the right one there. Remember how the formula works. And I will ask one more that I will not describe, but nothing that you haven't seen. If you look at these problems individually, they're not difficult problems. Probably the hardest one is just that volatility, because you have to do that repetitive calculation. But aside from that, really, these are very straightforward. Just use the formula correctly, put the numbers in the right place, and you'll get your answers. And you'll do well. This is a section where you can really come through strongly on the exam. Now, let me go to part three, your short essays. When I ask you one of these questions, the instructions will be clear. You answer four of the five. You mark the four that you want. Don't answer five and just hope that I'll give you the credit for the best. You mark the ones you want me to grade. Otherwise, I'll just grade the first four I come to. These questions you are to answer in one complete sentence. No more. And you have to use a complete sentence. Use proper grammar. I'm preparing you to be not just business people, but to be the leaders in your business, to be better than the others. Because if you come through me, then they'll know that you are better. I promise you that. My students come back to me and they say, you taught me how to answer questions quickly and accurately without bullshit. And that's what I'm doing here. Don't be offended if I hit you hard on these with marks off. You get better. Try to be as good as you can on the first pass. I'm going to go through some questions or some statements right now. Some of these, well, at least a few of them will be on your exam, but I'm going to give you an idea of what I ask on this part of the exam. And remember, I want one sentence. You go over one sentence, you start to lose points. I promise you will lose points if you try to go more than one sentence. You do a run-on sentence with lots of commas, that's not a good idea either. And yes, I do have a bullshit stamp, and I just got it re-inked. I kid you not. Let me go through some questions that would be of the kind that I could ask you. Some of these will be what I ask you. Others will give you the idea of what I would want. So let me start here. What is meant by the term financial intermediation? What is meant by the term financial intermediation? Distinguish between diversifiable risk and non-diversifiable risk. Let you catch up for a second. What is meant by the real rate of return? What is a deficit economic unit? What is a surplus economic unit? What is opportunity cost? Distinguish between economic cost and accounting cost. What do I mean by the residual claim when I refer to common stock? What do I mean by the residual claim when I talk about common stock? Why do we talk in this course primarily about public companies instead of private companies? How would the Federal Reserve use open market operations to expand the money supply? What is the relationship between the price of a debt instrument and its yield? What is the relationship between the price of a debt instrument and its yield? What is meant by the term risk premium? And for an answer like that, don't just give me a math formula. That's irrelevant. Tell me what it is. Don't say, well, the risk premium is the default premium plus the maturity premium plus the illiquidity premium. You tell me what risk premium means. What is the relationship between risk and expected return? Why is debt a cheaper source of capital than equity? Why is debt a cheaper source of capital than equity? That's enough of that. Every one of those questions has a one-sentence answer. Practice getting the exact one-sentence answer, and you will be in good shape. You're all kind of grumbling and mumbling about this. These are the kinds of questions, and by the way, I believe I gave you two of the questions. Somewhere in there, I think I gave you two of the questions that you actually hit, if I'm not mistaken. So it's not like I'm wasting your time doing that with you. I'm giving you a fair warning. And also giving you an idea of what the scope of these kinds of questions is. Notice that these are addressing broad concepts that I expect you to know, and I want you to answer me. Now, here's the caution again, and I want you to try to avoid losing points for stupid stuff. Don't make silly mistakes on me. Give me a complete sentence. Don't use text language on me. I can assure you that CEOs, that just bunches their boxers and frosts the fringes on their underwear. Yeah. When they get, you wish, don't you wish, Sparky? It just does, it works that way. She's very high up in a company. She said, I got this guy, he just graduated, he sends me this message, and I felt like I was like a teenager getting a text message. Don't put plus for and, B/C for because, those kinds of things. Give me straight language. You are now the adults, and you are going to go out there and walk on water compared to your peers in the business environment. You'll thank me later. That's after you slash the tires on my car. That's all I have to say. Talk to me. What do you want to ask me? I'm here. What's going to be on the test? No, I won't answer that one. You have a question. Go ahead.
Can I see the test?
You wish. Yes, you can. Thursday. Afternoon. Actually, if you saw the test, you'd probably, you know, say FTS. Fancy that scenario. Yeah.
Can you go over the difference between ordinary and dues with the annuities?
Ordinary and annuity due, it's actually the way you look at it, and you're going to use a calculator to do this, right? Look at whether the periodic cash flows happen at the ends of the periods, that's ordinary, or at the beginnings of the period. That would be due. Yes. Let's do it this way. Okay, we're going to have you calculate. You got a car. You just got a car loan, and it's, let's say, for $15,000. Okay. Your taste, $6,000 for the, yes, it's a Yugo. Or wait, a Pinto. Yes, do you remember the Pinto? That was the one that would explode when it was hit from behind. Those were so sweet. You'd sneak up behind them, tap them, and then back off for the fireball. Bitch, people would. Okay. What was I talking about? Please stay on the subject. You get a car loan, $6,000. And they say, all right, well, we're going to calculate your payments here. Well, on $6,000, let's say it's for a three-year loan. Well, okay, well, we're going to have you make your first payment today. So tell me, is that going to be calculating, are you going to calculate the payments with the begin, that is due, or end ordinary button? Yes, because it happens immediately. The first one hits you right now. Let's try something else. It turns out that you are my son, dear God. And now that I've realized that you are my son, I'm going to have to put away some money so that I can get some girl to actually marry you. And my plan is that, okay, I want you to be married when you're 30 years old, so I want you to have, $20,000 $500 in the bank for the wedding. Okay, when you're 30. Okay, I'm going to start putting money in the bank, and I want you to have that money. So I'm going to calculate how much I have to put in the bank every month so that you have $500 when you are 30, so you can have that dream wedding at the Elvis Chapel in Vegas. And you'll have enough left over for a honeymoon there at the Mustang Ranch one night. That's for her. For you, nothing. Okay. I'm going to start this at the end of next month. Is that a due or an ordinary? End of next month. Just look end. Does it happen at the end of a period, or is it happening at the beginning of a period? Interestingly, when you win big on a lottery, like if you hit the jackpot, $50 million, they don't give you the money right all at once. They won't. They actually give it to you in, it depends on the state, but a lot of states, they give you every year, they'll give you a check for the money, okay, now. And it will add up to, let's say, $10 million over 20 years. That'd be... let me think. That'd be what, $500,000 a year for 20 years? Yeah, you'll get $500,000 a year. Well, now there are places that would provide you with the equivalent of that right now. You sign over the cash flow and they'll give you the money equivalent. They're not going to give you $50,000. They're going to give you what it's worth now. The way the state will work is they're going to say, okay, we're going to give you your first payment today, because we want you to live, enjoy it. And then every year from now on the same date, you'll get your next payment of $500,000. So when I calculate the present value of that to see what its equivalent is now, am I going to calculate that as a present value of an annuity, ordinary annuity, or as the present value of an annuity due? Due, that's right. It will be a due. Because... You put the begin on your calculator to do that one. It's really, I can show you the formulas, but it's so stupidly easy now on these calculators, it's almost like the formula is arcane. And I showed you the one for ordinary, but the due one can get you into trouble. Just put it, begin if it's due, end if it's ordinary. Does that help a little bit with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, good. Okay. What else do you want to ask me about here? Go ahead. Okay, do you have your calculator open? Do you have your calculator available, a TI-83? Okay, I'm going to give you one right now. Let's do that. Let's just do that one that I just talked about. You won $10 million in the lottery. You're going to get $500,000 every year. You're going to get $500,000 every year starting right now for 20 years. Now, let's discount the cash flows at... 4.8%. So we'll do an annual 4.8. There's no compounding. If I say it's happening every year, that's actually going to make the compounding. Like if I said monthly payments, then you take whatever the interest rate was divided by 12. But here it's every year, so just leave it as an interest rate. So at the top of the grinder, you're going to put N20, okay? And then the I, 4.8. And remember, on the calculator for this, in formulas, you never use this. But in this special routine, you use the percentage, actually. Okay, now what's the next button that comes in there? PV. Okay, the present value we don't know, so we just walk on down. Okay, the present value we don't know, so we just walk on down. What's the next one? Payment. So in this one, we're going to put $500,000. And then the FV comes next, future value. That the only place you put that is if there's like a kicker at the end. We'll actually talk about kickers at the end when we talk about bonds. Bonds actually have a kicker at the end. But here there's no kicker, so it's zero. You'll know a kicker when you see one, and I'm not going to ask for one here. So, and then just go down, make sure those other ones are one. And go down to the bottom, and you see where it says begin and end? Here, we are a begin because we're getting it right now. Okay, so now walk back up and go to that PV and then just hit alpha enter, which is a solve. And what do you get? It should be a negative. They always come out negative, the PVs do. What do you get? Did you get it right? No, that sucks. No, the percent you have to do is 4.8%.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was saying. If you're using a formula, you have to change it into a decimal. But here, you just leave it as a percent. What do you got? What does it say? Yeah, you got it. Yeah, you got the answer. You didn't even, I know. It sure would be nice if you had commas in that. Yeah. Apps.
Oh.
Clear. Apps. Finance. Just hit enter. Time value of money. Yeah, right where you are.
Oh, and
there. There it is.
Okay.
Yeah, to get to that, it's apps, finance, TMV solver. So it's apps 1-1, and there you are on the screen that you'll need. Now, you should have gotten about 600 and six. Yeah, go ahead.
If you're compounding it monthly, then you divide the interest.
Yes, you would. Don't do that, though. Because I said they were annual payments, your natural compounding here is 1. If I were to say monthly payments, then you would use 12. You would say divide times 12 for the N, divided by 12 for the interest. Only if I said something like monthly. Okay, here it was, you got them yearly, so just automatically it's 1. Yeah. Yeah.
So, on my...
Oh, wow.
Do you know how to switch it to N? I mean, well, I have my beginning right there, you see, but it's always on N when I try and...
Damn it. I don't know how you get it to the begin on this one. Wait, come on. Nope.
I've got another calculator. I got one of those big scientific ones at home.
Is it a TI-83?
Yeah,
okay. You're going to have to, because I don't know how to get to the begin. You should see it. It should actually list it up here as a BEG in a little letters, and I don't remember how to do that here.
Remember what you're doing.
Okay. Any other questions you have? It should have been about 6,600,000, somewhere around there. Yeah. Say that. Yes, cash flow, I will ask about that. Yeah, it should come out. In other words, you would be willing to take $6,600,000 now instead of $500,000 a year for 20 years. Hell, I'd take less than that myself, but that's just me. Any other questions you have? Say that again. For which one? Oh, it's just the, for a perpetuity, it's just the dividend at period 1 divided by the discount rate minus the growth rate. Yeah. As a matter of fact, let me write it here. Hang on here. Let me get it up. Be sure you use the dividend at period one. If I give you the dividend now, you have to grow at one period. Okay? Just don't make that mistake. That's where people fall down on this. Don't make that mistake. Here, suppose a company pays a 40-cent per share dividend now, and that dividend is expected to grow at a rate of, let's say, 5% per year. If dividends, well, let me just put it this way. If cash flow from this corporation flow from such dividends is discounted at 14%, what is the current price of this stock? And let me read that off again so it's in the podcast as a clean statement. Suppose a company pays a 40-cent per share dividend now, and that dividend is expected to grow at a rate of 5% per year. If cash flow from the dividend is discounted at 14%, what is the current price of this stock? Now, the first thing you have to surmise, to work out, am I giving you the dividend now, or am I giving you the dividend one period out? I might give you D1. Watch it. Look at what I say. Here, I actually am giving you D0. So, in other words, D0 is 0.40, 40 cents. I gave you the dividend they're paying now. So the first thing I'm going to do is need to grow that dividend one period. So I'm going to need to grow that dividend by 1 plus 0.05, 0.40 times 1.05, which should come out to be, for God's sake, help me out here. 42 cents, thank you, I knew that. Now that's why I did it. I made it so I thought I could make it easy for me to calculate. Then my mind draws a blank. Don't get old, kill yourself before you get to my age. Okay, so now we can do the formula. Present value will be the dividend at period one divided by the discount rate for the cash flows, 0.14, minus the growth rate of 0.05. So that would be 0.42 over 0.09, and that should come out to be 0.42 divided by 0.09 is $4.67. That's the price of the stock. Like I said, it looks kind of almost cheap, but I still do this as a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation for the price of stocks to this day, yeah.
How would the tax differ if it was
P1? D1, I'd say that they are expected to pay a dividend in 1 year of So there I would be flagging, I've already given you D1. So there you would not grow the dividend because I had already given you one period out for the dividend. How's that look? Easy? It's not that hard, actually. I mean, I hate to telegraph the signal like this, but this is basically one of the problems on the exam. One of the workout problems is just finding the price of a stock. And I mean, look how fast this thing goes. And that's really going to be the case with a lot of those workout problems. Yeah, you had a question.
All right, are we going to be given D0 on
the exam? Well, I would give you either D0 or D1. That's just it. Here I gave you D0. I might give you D1. If I give you D1, don't grow it. It's already grown one period. But if I give you D0, you have to take it out one period for this formula to work. Because it's technically, this is actually a sort of a degenerated ordinary annuity formula. Remember, ordinary annuities are at the end of the period. That's why I have to use a D1 in the formula. I don't know how much sense that makes, but that's it. What else? Yeah. I'm not going to do a whole leverage problem, no, but I will go through the outline of it. Let me see. How would I do this? I know how I can do this. Show you something right here.
You said we're allowed a 5x7 for the test, right?
4x6. Yes. 5x7. No, you're not bringing a poster. Yeah, you're not bringing a damn poster. Yes. Yeah.
I sent you an email. I was in the hospital.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
Will you still accept that?
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I will. Yeah.
How many 5x6 cards did you say?
One. Okay. 1 4x6.
And also, I don't have a doctor's note on me right now. Can I bring that in?
Yeah, Thursday. That'll be fine. Okay, let me find. I'm going to see if I can bring something up here. Give me a second. See if I can pull this off here. Bear with me one second, and I'll show you. Computer. Local disk. Hang on here. I think maybe I can do something here. I'm going to just show you the outline of a problem here. And I'll show you the outline of the problem that was on the quiz. That was what was on the quiz. Here, let me kill this. Now, if you look at the way it was laid out, all I asked you for on the quiz were a couple of the elements of it. On the exam, I'll ask you for more. Before I go very far with this, notice that your sales volatility is the same as your operating income volatility with just variable costs. They will be the same number. So if I were generous, I could say, well, give me the sales volatility, give me the operating income without fixed costs. All you do is write down one answer. They'd be the same answer. Now, if you're really sophisticated, you can even back up and figure out what the sigma was that way of operating income. But the whole bottom line of what you're wanting to do here in a problem like this is you're going to have to find the expected value, which is 2,500 times 0.04 plus 3,000 for the sales, times 0.08 plus 3,500 times 0.20 plus 4,000 times 0.36 plus 4,500 times 0.20 plus 0.08 times 5,000 plus 0.04 times 5,500. That's not hard to do. Just don't make a mistake when you're doing that. Now, getting the sigma is a pain in the butt because you have to take each of those numbers, like 2,500, minus the mean that you've gotten, square it, and multiply it by the probability, and then add all those up. But if you look at it very carefully, you're going to find something. First of all, the numbers to the right of the center are going to come out to be the same as the numbers to the left. In other words, 3,500 minus 4,000 quantity squared times 0.20 is going to give you the same number as 4,500 minus 4,000 quantity squared times 0.20. They'll be the same number. So really, and if you look at that center number, 4,000 minus 4,000 quantity squared times 0.36 is zero. If I give you a symmetric distribution, the center is always zero. So really, all you ever have to do to get a sigma in one of my problems is to take 2,500 minus 4,000 quantity squared times 0.04 plus 3,000 minus 4,000 quantity squared times 0.08 plus 3,500 minus 4,000 quantity squared times 0.20. And then you take the sum of those and then you multiply it by 2 to cover the other side of the distribution over here. So in other words, shutting this off for a second, moving this over, and then turning this back on, all I would have to do for that first one and for any of them, 2,500 minus 4,000 quantity squared times 0.04, plus 0.08 times 3,000 minus 4,000 quantity squared plus, God, get off me, plus 0.20 times 3,500 less 4,000 quantity squared. You get that result, and then you times it by 2 to cover the other side of the distribution, then take the square root of it. If you do that, you'll get $663.32. That's sigma for the sales line. Now, the mean for the sales line was 4,000. So now I can get the coefficient of variation by taking $663.32 divided by 4,000. That's the sales volatility. That will be a percentage. The result of that should be 16.58%. All CVs are percentages. Now I'm going to take you back over to the sheet. All you do is just run that for every line that you'll need. You'll need it for sales, you'll need it for operating income without fixed costs, and you'll need it for the operating income with fixed costs, that is for EBIT. And then really, there's only one more you need to do. Include your interest payments. You don't need to get clear down. It's almost a trick with these. You don't need to go clear down to the net income line, because if you'll notice, the net income is going to be, oops, I didn't mean to do that. The net income is going to have the same coefficient of variation as EBT. Why is that? Do you remember what I told you why that is? Why is the CV for the net income line going to be identical to the CV for the earnings before taxes line? Okay, here it is. Your taxes are a percentage of EBT, right? So whenever you subtract something that's a variable cost, it doesn't affect the coefficient of variation. Variable costs don't affect volatility. So you, if those of you who decided that you wanted to stay for the rest of this, there's a ruse in here. You don't need to calculate net income's volatility. Don't waste your time. You'll have everything you need once you get to the EBT line. Once you get to the EBT line, you're going to have several figures. First of all, your business risk is going to be your EBIT line. That includes variable costs, fixed costs. That's business risk. To find your contribution of operating leverage, you take your total business risk minus your operating income without fixed cost. That will give you your operating leverage. That's it. That's all there is to it. That's that easy. And then from there, well, your financial risk, all you do is drive it down, get your CV for EBT, and then you take that minus your business risk. So in other words, CV at EBT minus CV at EBIT, there's your financial leverage, contribution to financial leverage. So that's really all there is to the problem. It's not as complicated. And if you look, if you're into puzzles, if you're into puzzles, you might notice that there's even a dirty shortcut hidden in there. You see how you have to compute three sigmas there at the top to get to EBIT? Actually, you have to compute only one sigma. Show you. Let me show you what's happening here. If you look carefully, first of all, you notice that your CV for sales and operating income before fixed costs, without fixed costs, are going to be the same CV. I'll get all of my mu's. I get my sigma for my top line, my sales. Then I can walk down and write that CV on the next place I need it, operating income without fixed cost. But because I know, and now let me, I don't know how I can do this, because I'm going to, oh, I know what I can do. I know what I can do. Let me do it this way. I'm just going to write this. I'll write this here, and then I'll switch over. Sales, op, inc, without fixed cost, EBIT. Okay, now watch what happens. I want to show you a trick here. Okay, now the mu's were 4,000. 4,000, you have to get all your expected values, 2,600 and 1,800. 600 and 1,800. Now the first coefficient of variation I'm going to have to get, 16.58%. Now watch what happens. I'm going to switch you over now and put this on something so it turns off. Now watch. I've got that. I did those calculations, just those. Then I say, oh, well, I know that the CV for operating income, whoops, I need to write down my sigma here, 663.32. Okay, look, watch what I'm going to do here. See if you follow me. Okay, I got my coefficient of variation for sales. But I know that's going to be the coefficient of variation for operating income without fixed costs. You see that? That those will be the same because all I did was take out a variable cost. So I can say, oh, wait a minute. I know that CV is sigma over mu. So here, I know that 0.1658 is the sigma of this line divided by 2600. So I can back in and get 0.1658 times 2600 comes out to be a sigma of 431.16. So I can put 431.16 on that line. Did you see what I just did there? Now here's the cool thing. Watch what I'm about to do. The sigma at EBIT is going to be the same sigma as up here. So I can write 431.16 there. And then I can say, oh, wait a minute. CV is sigma over mu. So now I can get the CV on this line. You have to compute only one CV, one sigma. And that the hard way. And then everything else, this one will come out to be 23.95. Just this divided by that. And then there's one more stunt I can pull. The sigma after you take out interest will be the same sigma as here, except with a lower expected value. The EBT, after taking out your interest, your EBT, the mu will be 1,800. Your sigma is going to be the same one that was there. You'll have three sigmas in a row. You got your CV. Do you see it? If you follow the trick, you can get this problem done in a couple of minutes. If you see what I just did there. The first thing you're going to have to do, you're going to have to crank out a sigma, all of the mu's. You'll have to get all of the expected values. You get the first sigma, then you get the first CV. Then you write that CV at operating income without fixed cost, and that can allow you to back into the sigma there. And then you just write that sigma twice more, it'll be the same sigma, and then you can compute the CVs one after the other without ever doing any of that squares and square root stuff again. If you follow it, it actually works very cool. It saves you mucho time. One of the longest drag out problems on one of these is just that one right there. See how easy it is though? Once you understand, you have to get all of your expected values. And then you'll have to get your sigma for the top line. You have to do one, but remember, that's not that hard to do. And then write that CV. Then take that down and write the same CV on the next line. Then back into sigma, because sigma will be the expected value times the sigma from above. And then you just walk down the line. The sigmas will then stay the same. And the only thing that's changing CV is that you're falling as far as expected value goes. And then you can just calculate them virtually instantly. I know. That's something I save for the very end of this. I never bring this up until half the people have left. And they'll try to follow on the podcast. We'll see. I don't think so. Yeah, they will. As long as you stick to my format for laying out the work of the problem, it'll just be suddenly boom, boom, boom. The sigmas will just fall into line. Every one will be the same as the one above. The ones that are important anyway. You know, the ones that are important are the op income without fixed costs, then the EBIT, which is operating income with fixed costs, and then the EBT. Those are the ones that are important for me to know, and they'll all be the same. Yeah. Well, you calculate those. Those are easy to calculate. Those are just the expected values times the number. Yeah, I like here. Oops, I took that off.
Yeah, I thought you just got there, so intermediate.
Yeah. It's always going to be, if it's a symmetric distribution, there'll always be the center value. I mean, that, yeah, you can even make it cheap if you want to be, if you want to be a jerk about it. You can even do it easier because the expected value will be the center value if it's a symmetric distribution. So all you have to do is really write down the center value if you really want to be lazy ass about it. Yes, I don't do asymmetry. Anything else you want to ask about? Go home. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.